Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another show of Open Government Radio. My name is Steve Buckley, and I'm your host. The today's show is for April. I'm sorry. It's May. May 11th. May 11th, 2010. Sorry, I just noticed I didn't change the date on the blog. For those of you who are listening either live or in the future, you can follow along with the conversation by going to ustransparency.com, and that is my blog. And you can see all the information there about today's program and links that we'll probably or might be using and talking about. My guest today is Luke Fretwell, who is the creator and operator of govfresh.com. And as you can see there, but in case you're not following along on the blog, it's... GovFresh is a website which, in Luke's words, works to inspire government-citizen collaboration and build a more engaged democracy, and which also features Gov 2.0, Open Gov News, guides, TV, tech, people, and official U.S. government feeds all in one place. And it's been 1 year since Luke started that up, and it's gone in different directions. I mean, not different, totally different. It's evolved probably somewhat differently than he may have imagined, but we'll turn to him in just a minute. I did want to point out in, if you scroll down at U.S. Transparency, there are some links down there. I did want to point out that there are notes, link number 7 under the list there, points to notes from the last Open Government Directive workshop, which was workshop number 4 held a couple weeks ago, April 28th, at the U.S. Department of Agriculture headquarters building in Washington. So if you want to check out the notes, go ahead and put something there. I'm going to be putting some up as soon as I get off the program today. Something else. There's just some other general things there. But so I'll turn to what I was hoping to do today before introducing Luke, is that since Luke is definitely outside the Beltway, he's about as far away as you can get and still be on the continental U.S., and so he definitely has a perspective that is not the Washington, D.C.-based, inside the Beltway, insider type of perspective when it comes to open government. So if there are people who would like to join in the conversation and give us their perspective, after we've had some time to talk with Luke, I'd like to hear from them as well as far as how they see things happening from outside the Beltway as far as the open government initiative goes and in the federal government. So I'm going to see if Luke is there. Are you there, Luke?
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Luke. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing? Great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay. Well, you've certainly accomplished a lot in the past year, and I thought it'd be a good time to talk about big picture things. And like I said, since you're way outside the Beltway, I'm certain you have some perspectives that we don't usually hear as often as one might if they were, like, say, in Washington, D.C., trying to figure out how to do all this open government stuff. So, but let's look at back, if you can go explain for those who aren't familiar with GovFresh, and I did leave a link there on my blog if you're following along at ustransparency.com, you can see that there's a link for GovFresh so people can look at that. But if you want to give us a little tour or however you want to, I mean, we're all, I'm assuming some people will be watching and listening on their, as they're looking at the computer. So I only provided a couple links there for you, but if you want to take us off and give us a little tour, a little, perhaps a little history about, let's do that. Let's start out. How did you come to start up GovFresh? Give us a little history about yourself.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I am I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area and went to school at George Mason University and studied international relations and political science and worked in and around the Beltway and really have a firm grasp of what the way Washington works and sort of the issues around federal government. And about 10 years ago, I moved to the San Francisco Bay Area to further my web career and started working for startups during kind of the end of the dot-com boom and really, you know, just sort of learned a lot about the web, Web 2.0, development, and kind of all of the lessons learned from the dot-com boom, and had been working at a few startups. And then about a year ago, I had started paying attention to what was happening in Washington, D.C., and in government in general around the adoption of social media tools and open source for development for websites and the mobile aspect that government was adopting, and really seeing government adopt, you know, social media, open source, and kind of moving towards the cloud and really thinking different about government. And I started GovFresh just on a whim, and it really was mostly just aggregating social media feeds from federal government. So you could go on to GovFresh and see sort of a live stream of what was happening at the White House, and it would aggregate the YouTube, the latest YouTube uploads, or the Flickr uploads, or the blog post, or Twitter post, all in one little live stream for the White House. And for me, it was fascinating because, you know, being kind of a C-SPAN junkie, and getting like to get news straight from the source, and even if it's kind of boring, but really having direct access to that information was very interesting and exciting for me. And then over time, I just started building more feeds, and then as I was looking at the sites, I realized that literally, some of these sites were federal disasters, and just started blogging about what the government could do better as far as a tech strategy, and it's kind of evolved from there. And really, I've learned a lot about what's happening in the federal level, but also at the local level, which I think to me is really interesting, just because, you know, there are some really innovative people that are adopting tech strategies and innovating in a much quicker way than the federal government can, just because of the nature of the beast. So it's been a great year. You know, I've learned a lot about social media and tech and government. I've met a lot of great people, and like with any venture, you learn a lot about yourself. So it's been a great experience.
So it sounds like you can take Luke Fretwell out of the Beltway, but can't take the Beltway out of Luke Fretwell.
Part
of you was, even though you're living in California, it's still part of you having grown up or been exposed there. You know, you can't, that it's still part of your psyche, your perspective.
Well, I moved to the Bay Area and I live here and I will continue to live here for the reason that so many people live in the Bay Area. It's the epicenter of innovation and technology and sort of, you know, the creative use of technology. You know, I, having lived in Washington, D.C. and in the Washington, D.C. area, I have an appreciation for the culture, and I think I have a lot of sympathy for some of the hurdles that the federal government faces. I think that, you know, there's a lot of great people that are doing innovative stuff and trying to change it. A while ago, this was last year, I wrote a piece on government 2.0 and the cultural divide. You know, we have Washington, D.C., which is sort of the stereotypical bureaucratic mentality, that's the perception. And then you have Silicon Valley, which is startup, fail fast. And, you know, they're two different worlds. And I think that, you know, a lot of times those cultures clash, or they are clashing with what's happening in, you know, Gov 2.0. And for somebody like me who's experienced both cultures and actually lived and worked in both, you know, I think I have a good perspective on how they're different, but also how they can work together. And I, you know, I kind of see both sides, I guess.
Chris, with the knowledge of both sides, I think having spent 25 years in D.C. myself, although that was not my first 25 years, probably not my second, so you have the perspective of growing up there, but I had the perspective of starting my career there. But I would always come back to Massachusetts or other places, and when they, you know, found out that I worked in Washington for the federal government, it would be like, the question would be kind of like, well, what's going on down there? I mean, you know, this is not new about what's wrong with government or what's wrong with Washington or what, you know, this is the type of frustration has always been there to a certain level. But they would always think that there was maybe something in the water, or, you know, how could a whole city or a whole culture, you know, be so different? And I would try to explain to them that the people there are basically the same. I would meet the same types of people and personalities as I would almost anywhere else. Here I'm back now in my own hometown where I grew up on Cape Cod, but it, you know, I recognize the same type of people here as there, in, you know, local government or you know, business people, you know, whenever they're in. Is that the do you see that too? I mean, I would imagine that people have a stereotype of Silicon Valley as well, but it's. Do you sense that, having grown up in D.C., do you try to explain to, do you see that too, that they're basically just people working in a situation trying to do the best they can, and it's not because they're taking drugs or they're somehow taking in some intoxicants, or they're crazy, or there's something in the air? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's pervasive in anything, right? Every industry has sort of, you know, negative connotations to it. But that doesn't mean that, you know, everybody who's working in it is lazy or corrupt or whatever it is that, you know, any negative stereotypes. But I think that there are a lot of what's happening now with this open government movement is getting a lot of people who have energy inside the government. It's giving them an opportunity to really show that they can make changes quickly, and it's energizing them. And, you know, like for me, I interact with a lot of people who are passionate about what they're doing and openly acknowledge that, you know, there's bureaucratic processes that they have to deal with that they're trying to change. but they're still very excited. You know, Tim O'Reilly talks about how, you know, he's following the alpha geeks and, you know, what's cutting edge with technology. And I like to say that, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, I'm following kind of the alpha gov and who is leading the government movement on building a much more efficient and collaborative, connected government. So, you know, I think that you're always going to have kind of the negative stereotypes about government, but there are so many amazing people that are changing, that are breaking that stereotype at all levels, that, you know, it's a challenge for them. But, you know, what I try to do with GovFresh is really accentuate those people who are trying to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it looks like you've done from the comments that I've seen, you know, about what, you know, GovFresh has done, and you've done a pretty good job of doing that, where it doesn't seem to be something that is not being provided elsewhere.
Yeah, and it's not so much, it's for two reasons. One, I think that it helps other people connect it helps other people in and outside of government, because I think there's a role for the citizen like me to engage with the government and help them understand or engage in ideas. But also people within government, creating a forum where both citizens who want to make government better and public servants who, you know, these alpha govs, really connecting them, creating a place where they can connect and see what's going on and learn from one another, whether it's a case study or a profile of someone or, you know, somebody doing guest blogging on the site. But the second thing is really to create a forum for or a platform for just to kind of be a cheerleader for it and say, look, these people are doing great things, because there's not a lot of that happening. I mean, let's face it, you know, most people just are, you know, knock what government's doing, and there's not a platform for people to say, hey, this person is doing tremendous work and we should acknowledge them for it. And that's what I like to do as part of GovFresh.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, I was just looking at that. I recommend anybody to look back at the article you were mentioning, the cultural divide posting that you had, and that was for people who would go back. I guess if they were to go to your search box and just look in cultural divide, you wrote it back in September. So that's what we're referring to if people want to look at that. And you're talking about the big Gov2O show that will soon hit Washington. And, of course, you were talking, this is back in September, and in a couple of weeks? Is it next week even?
Yeah, that was the, I think that was.
The same thing all over again. So it's, I think it's the same thing. The Tim O'Reilly's traveling Gov2O Expo show or something like that. But there's been a number of those that are out there, and it certainly is nice to see that people are excited about government 2.0/open government. But at the same time, I guess I have some concerns that if you get everybody overexcited, then, you know, get them all excited and then no place to go, or, you know, people's expectations get so high, and I think that's what you were talking about in your piece there, even 6 months, or is it 6 months? Well, it's back in September, whenever that was. Did I mischaracterize that feeling that you were trying to capture in that posting, or is that basically, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and this is something that people are talking about, I think that, you know, technology is not going to solve the problem around government. It's gonna help a lot, but really, you know, there's a cultural issue that needs to change, and some of that will change with the new generation of public servants. Some of it will change by mandate, like what you're seeing with the Open Government Directive. And, you know, it really, so it speaks to both of that, right? The technology that is out there, and people may be afraid of or just don't want to deal with it, or think that we're being too aggressive in adopting it. You know, they'll change their perspective or they won't. You know, there's this whole culture issue that government has to deal with. And I think that, you know, everybody's trying to deal with it as best as they can, you know, while adopting these tools, because, you know, when you have 400 million people on Facebook, you know, it may be a good idea to see how you can leverage it, but at the same time being cautious about it. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing. You know, within government.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that I'm hearing that more and more, the cultural aspect that had been ignored before. I mean, I'm, you know, like I said, having been in D.C. for 25 years myself, and, you know, I know the culture there, and it hasn't changed since I left. I mean, if it had, I would know about it. But the idea that somehow, if we all get together on, you know, we just need to find some type of perfect social media tool that will make your boss somehow want to try crazy new things so that everybody in the world can find out what your office is doing. Where, you know, whereas we've been pretty obscure little cubbyhole in the bureaucracy, now it's going to be exposed to the world. That can be pretty scary to anybody. So, you know, the idea that, you know, somehow you can slip something in your boss's coffee and he'll all of a sudden say, sure, let's do it. Like, that's not going to happen. Oh, you can do it for a few bosses, but I mean, how are you going to do this to, like, thousands and thousands of supervisors all over the federal bureaucracy at the same time? You know, you'd have to get them to be all irrational at the same time. I think that certainly I agree with you that, and I've, you know, been online for 20 years, so I've been waiting for the day when we're all finally, or, you know, or 90% of the people are online or at least accessible to the internet. And that's what I at one point I thought it was the same thing. I thought, oh, wait until we all get on the internet, then you'll see. Now, you know, we can all watch videos. We have such high bandwidth that it's like, oh, maybe it has something to do with people's comfort level or some cultural aspect. And so I'm encouraged. I'm glad, and I was, when you wrote that piece, I was glad to see finally somebody else is recognizing that technology can only take us so far, and it's not as far as we think. So that's my perspective, but it seemed like you were at least recognizing that, and I think it's coming up more and more.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are recognizing that now. You know, I mean, I think with anything, you know, when people are excited about social media or technology, you know, and just playing with it and the possibilities, and I think that's what's happened in kind of the open government movement, especially as you see with, like, the adoption of, you know, new tools, whether it's Drupal or WordPress for building websites, where it's like, I can deploy this immediately. I can deploy this, you know, within a week and have a website, or with social media, I can create a Facebook page or a Twitter account and start engaging or pushing my message out to millions of people at no cost. But then, you know, once you kind of the euphoria of adopting all of this and understanding that you can do more with less, then comes the heavy lifting and how do we maintain engagement or what type of engagement should we have with people, with the social media tools and with the web stuff, what features do we really need? Drupal has 50 million nodes, but, do we need all of those nodes? Or WordPress has a million plugins. Do we need them all? But really, now that you understand the tools, really figuring out what does it entail, what is right for us, what tools are right for us, or how should we use this social media? And I think that's where it's starting to get to now. A lot of people who are doing the heavy lifting in government are realizing, that they need to really think about what do we adopt and how do we execute that adoption.
And what works? I mean, and that's the other thing is that we talked about at the Open Government Directive workshop a couple of weeks ago is besides cultural change that needs to happen, that how do you measure what works? It's funny that they come out with everybody's talking about best practices and they still haven't figured out. Well, how do you know? How do you know that? How do you know it's working? Just a gut feel. People come up to you and it's anecdotal. Things. If you try something, like for GovFresh, people come back, hey, this is great, and so you get the good feedback. But if there's a mixed, if somebody tries something in the federal government and they say they're trying to, better transparency, better collaboration, better participation, then what metrics are there that you can actually say, see, boss, it worked?
Yeah, and yeah, and so there's this mentality with the government that government shouldn't fail. And, there's a difference with, I think a lot of people get excited about, encourage failure, which is a little bit misleading. But, a lot of people.
Suicide.
Yeah, exactly. In the startup environment, you're always trying new things. You're executing things iteratively, short idea or ideas on a short timeline and testing and seeing how they work and keeping and just iterate. And the government, isn't encouraged to do that, or in a lot of cases, we're not allowing them to do that. And I think that's part of the problem, really letting government experiment and fail. And being okay with letting them fail as long as it's not like this huge disastrous failure, right? So failure in government would be, in this scenario, would be if they were going to conduct an experiment, quote-unquote, and deploy some huge project, tech project or social media project or whatever it is, 6 months, in 6 months that cost millions of dollars, and the reality was that, it could be done for hundreds of thousands of dollars, that's failure. But that's big failure or bad failure. But, good failure is letting government set up, WordPress blog and testing out whether it's effective for communicating to citizens, and from the internal side, whether it meets security standards or the terms of service or anything like that is important. But really encouraging government, citizens encouraging government to fail early and often to really learn, because it's the dynamics with executing these things could be completely different as it relates to government. So you can't just say, this startup has a YouTube channel or a Twitter account, so we can get one too, and we can just use it the same way. Or this company is using these tools, these open source tools, and government can use them the same way. That's not often the case, and government needs to experiment just like startups do. And I think that, we need, as citizens, we need to encourage that and be understanding when they when they're not always successful.
Well, that actually is the nub of it right there, what you just said. Because the citizens are the ones who don't like failure. And, you know, even if we were to make everybody in Washington wave a wand, you know, we waved a wand over their heads. When I talk about Washington, I mean, the federal government. And they all agreed totally, you know, this little light bulb went on over their head, and they said, suddenly, I appreciate the need to experiment early and often so that we don't make big mistakes later on. Let's do it that way. Oh, yes, and they all agree. Everybody inside the Beltway feels that way. But yet, everybody outside the Beltway still has that mentality of, what, you wasted $1 million on what? And it didn't work? What? Or $100,000 or, you know, things. They make fun of, $500 toilet seat or something like that. You know, which is like that. So there's no dollar amount if it, you know, you can throw out money, a figure that sounds like, and you wasted the money, you know, then that's, I think, is the larger dilemma, is that even if everybody within the Beltway became enlightened, you still have the unenlightened outside the Beltway. So that's kind of a larger dilemma, is how you explain to the people that, no, that's okay. They have permission, you know, we're experimenting so that we can save more money further down the line. And so this, you know, so there's that. So even the average citizens can't, I think that their mindset needs to change from one of just sitting back and criticizing, you know, whenever money is quote unquote wasted. And so, it needs to be safe. The culture needs to be a safe place for, you know, what you were saying. But it's awful hard when all the voters are, or not all, but 51% of the voters are not understanding that you have to spend money to save money. So.
Yeah, and I think that to that point, on the government side, and I wrote something about this during Transparency Camp in Washington D.C. In late March, you know, talking about how government can better spread and talk about its tech and open government efforts, because I think that's part of the process, is, you know, not saying we're doing this and then announcing fail, but really it's a process, and really bringing the citizen along with you. And, you know, there's basic things that the government can do to better communicate their work, whether it's setting up a blog where citizens can subscribe to, or kind of the niche media, like press people like me, or journalists or bloggers or whatever you want to call me, and really giving them direct access to what's going on, and even encouraging them to engage and provide advice. You know, if they're saying, if government's, you know, we want to do this, please, share with us your experience, comments, or expertise. You know, they become stakeholders in it as well. So it's not just the government failing; it's, you know, everybody sort of trying to build this together. And when you have a stake in the outcome, then it's not the government failing; it's everybody iterating and building on it together. So I think, you know, if we can get to that, then do away with kind of the government. You know, the government is incompetent,
right?
Or the
right.
Government,
yeah.
Or the government failed. It's, you know, what is it that's saying? If you're pointing a finger at someone, remember there's always three pointing back at you. So I think that's what it starts to get to. Is you can no longer just point fingers. You know, you're responsible too if it fails, whether you didn't engage because there was the opportunity, or, you know, you engaged and you misdirected directed the government or the process. And the latter is okay. The first part is not. You know, the former is not. And I think that's where we're trying to get to. And ultimately, it won't be, you know, the government failing.
Yeah, the people are comfortable with the status quo, whether it's citizens who just want to sit back and bitch and gripe because they have been so long denied access to the decision-making process between elections. So they've been relegated to basically just hiring and firing every 2 or 4 years. So,
right.
But so if you're used to that, and it's you know you it is, even if you were offered the opportunity to say, okay, so where would you like to build that bridge? Say, oh well, you know, they're taken aback. Well, I don't know. I've never, you know, I just want to hire and fire people. I don't want to have to use my brain to actually think about the possibilities of, you know, how to make my town or state or country a better place, because that's certainly a lot more work creatively, intellectually, than just sitting back and saying, you know, red state, blue state, left, right, us and them. You know, it's much easier when it's us and them. You know, just pick a side and stick with it, as opposed to, you know, well, what if it's in between? Whoa. They're not used to using that part of their brain. So it is going to be difficult, even, you know, even when the government, our government, offers us these opportunities, people are not used to that. So we'll see. But I'm going to tell people, if they're listening here, I just want to remind them that if they want to join the conversation, my name is Steve Buckley, and this is Open Government Radio. And we're talking with Luke Fretwell of GovFresh, govfresh.com. And the number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 917-388-4210. And so, Luke, what's up with GovFresh now? I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but this has just been a labor of love, hasn't it?
It has been a labor of love. I'm in the process of you know, exploring options around partnering with people or other businesses and sponsorships. You know, at some point, a labor of love has to become sustainable, or you have to have, you know, reasonable amount of time for it. And I'm, you know, currently deciding on how to move forward with it. I mean, I have some great options, but really trying to figure out what's best for it. You know, I see the potential that it has, and every day I get up and get excited about, you know, what it can do. But at the same time, I need to, you know, really think hard about, is this sustainable? Is it viable? Is it something that I can do, you know, every day or half a day or even an hour a day, that is going to have some sort of, you know, financial return. So we're getting there. But like you said, as of now, it's really been a kind of a civics project for me, and really given me an opportunity to meet fantastic people. Every day I'm amazed at the people that I interact with at all levels of the government. So there's something to be said for that. But you know, the amount of time that I spend on it, or have spent on it, or am able to spend on it in the future, you know, has to kind of work itself out. You know, we'll see.
So if someone wants to be a sponsor of GovFresh, they should. You're open to possibilities. Is that right? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the way it's moving. And, you know, there's other sort of entrepreneurial ideas around revenue that, you know, I'm going to be exploring in the next couple of months. You know, because Fresh has been so iterative, I never really put my head around how could it be. You know, who knows? If I could do this every day and be sort of a social entrepreneur around fostering great ideas for government, that's the American dream. You know, we'll see. Finding the right partner, whether, you know, it's a sponsor or a business partner who wants to work together on it, we'll see. I mean, there's a couple of opportunities that are available.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. That's, well, any of you don't want, point them in my direction because I'm looking for the same thing.
Yeah, isn't everybody?
Well, yeah, although, yeah, of course, we'd like to think that you're offering, and you are, I think, offering something different than the average Gov2O evangelist. There we go, evangelist. And of course, I do too. I think I might be trying to do something different than other people. Of course, like with the Open Government Radio and the blog and so forth, and other things that I'm involved in. So it's, yeah, it's simply a matter. This is an evolving field. I mean, basically, I describe myself as a democratic systems engineer. I'm an engineer by training, but I look at this as a system, and it's a democratic system that needs some more than a little tweaking. And so it's a very exciting time to do that. So, and I think you and I and there are others that are seeing this as more than just an opportunity to sell widgets, and that it's actually something much larger. And so that's why I understand the Gov 2.0 moniker, I think, is very attractive to people in that sense. The idea that there's, you know, that, oh, well, this is, you know, that was 1.0 before, now it's Gov 2.0. But even then, everybody seems to be going off in different directions. Everybody has their own flavor of their own idea and even their own definition of Gov 2.0, which I noticed when I went to your, on GovFresh, people can go look at the Heroes section. There's right across the top there, and I guess you ask people, that's a standard question you ask, so what does Gov 2.0 mean to you? And I guess,
yeah,
you did that too, and it seems like it's evolving. I know there's actually going to be a webinar later this afternoon with Tim O'Reilly, who is a great proponent of the Gov2O moniker, and so he's, and the webinar is called "What Is Gov2.0?"
Yeah,
so they're still trying to. And if you look at all those videos, everybody has their own private definition, and I even commented on one time to one of the people there, and he finally came back and said, well, that's what it means to me. So I'm like, oh, okay, that was the question, what does it mean to you? And so he defended it by his definition by saying, well, that's what it means to me. So like, oh,
yeah, and I think that you know, there's you know, there's Gov2O, which you know, is two things. It's sort of an extension of, you know, the Web 2.0 concept. It allows people to kind of generally place the open government, open source government using social media into a into a bucket when describing it. And anything you try to you're trying to pitch or communicate has to have some sort of name. I mean, when you're branding something, you have to have a product to sell. So, you know, in some ways it helps communicate that, right? It's Gov2O. I know a lot of people are indifferent to that term, and a lot of people use open government, but it's an interesting conversation. I think there's been a lot of sort of semantics around open government versus Gov2O, or why are we using Gov2O? But I think in general, you know, really being able to use a specific term or term set of terms for communicating, we want to do, you know, we want to make government more collaborative or participatory or transparent, is great. I don't know if it's the best term, but it works, or at least it's one of the better terms that we
works,
have.
Works for Tim O'Reilly. He can charge $1,000 a head to go to his expo. So I guess if it works, you know, if you can get people to pay, go ahead.
that's the other, the comment that I'm sure they are well aware of. I think there are some concerns about one entity branding the Gov2O concept and kind of owning it, especially when it comes to, government and civics. Web2O is one thing, but, I think there are some concerns around that. So it'll be interesting to see how the semantics evolve and, whether Gov2O is something that people will continue to use or whether it'll be, moved to open government or, who knows, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The same thing happened in the 90s when, everybody was getting websites for government websites and so forth, and that was a big hot thing. So all the same thing, same companies that put on these two-day conferences for, $600 or $800, same companies are still there. But back then, of course, instead of Gov2O, they were using eGov. So it was eGov this and eGov that and everything else. And to me, this is basically eGov 2.0. It's not Gov 2.0. In my mind, it's like eGov. But somebody said, let's drop the E because, we can market it better, Sounds when you say Gov 2.0, it sounds like it's a whole new marketing point of view. It's totally new government, and so
yeah.
So I understand from a marketing point of view, but sometimes marketing can screw stuff up because
I think that frankly, I don't care what you call it, but I think that anything that's going to get people excited about. Incrementally or iteratively making the government better, if it's Gov2O or Gov3O or whatever, I think that anything is better than nothing. And I actually think that this is, it's positive overall.
Mm-hmm. Well, the danger is, and I guess because I'm older than you, you were living in D.C. in the 90s, right?
Right.
But you probably weren't aware of the – were you aware of the reinventing government effort?
I was. We studied it in school, and I read the Osborne and Gabler book. We actually had David Osborne. There was an interview with David Osborne on GovFresh. So if you do a search for reinventing government or David Osborne, there's a great little Q&A with him on there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did see that. But most people don't know. Yes, there was a book by Dave Osborne, not Super Dave Osborne, but David Osborne and Ted Gabler called Reinventing Government that came out before Clinton and Gore came into office. And they picked up on that, and so they renamed it. Their openness initiative, in effect, was called Reinventing Government. And people don't know, So, of course, they used a grandiose term there, too. They weren't calling it reengineering government or tweaking government or stuff like that. Oh, no, we're reinventing it, That whole marketing thing wherever, we're reinventing the car. You always see that. Oh, yes, does it have a gas engine and four wheels? Well, guess what? You didn't reinvent it, but it sounds great. Whoa, big sweep of the hand. So they were kind of trapped by that reinventing everything. But the point I wanted to make was that effort got taken over by the marketing people. And what I mean by the marketing people is that, yes, there were all these, carpetbaggers or whatever you want to call them. You know, oh, yeah, we can sell you that too, for citizen interaction. You know, a website with citizen interaction, which they took to mean as, you can renew your license online. Ooh, we're interacting with the citizenry. Oh, yeah. But they're, trying to hype it to be something more than it was. But the other part was that they would give out awards to the champions of reinvention. You hear that term. Whenever I see champions again, I'm like, okay, that we're going to champion our way through here, and if we give out enough trophies, then everybody will want a trophy and forget that their boss is the way he is and so, is reluctant to do this, and they'll somehow become irrationally exuberant and just try starting things so they can get a golden hammer, which is the trophy they gave out in the 90s to federal employees who, innovated and experimented and so forth. And so they were trying to get all the, those were the tip of the iceberg. They were trying to get the 90% to the iceberg to come out as far as the federal employees, to get them to do other stuff too. And then they found that they couldn't, that simply giving out those trophies was not enough. And so they started giving them out willy-nilly. So the danger is, I guess, they think that the marketing, like I said, if it's almost like saying, yes, everybody can be a better, you can teach your kids or to be better soccer players, or if you give out enough trophies. And sometimes, it's going to take more than attaboy. Maybe they need to, the tools or the practice or the this or the that or whatever it takes, but simply just being up. And I heard somebody the other day at our open government workshop talking about, people just need to do it. How can we get people to just do it and try open government tools? It's like, they aren't going to just do it because you want them to. You have to change the carrots and sticks. So, more carrots, less sticks. And not just get them all excited and try to push them off a cliff. They are not going to go. So that's the dilemma. And I guess having been through that in the 90s, I just wanted to make sure it didn't happen all over again. So.
I think that some of the differences with you can probably speak better to this, from what I understand and what I remember was the difference between what's happening with reinventing government and what's happening with open government is that with reinventing government it was still very internal, and there was, let's review these processes around procurement or hiring or whatever it was, and refine them. And what open government is doing different is providing, and with reinventing government, there wasn't sort of insight into what was happening. Information wasn't available on the web. The processes weren't available. It wasn't, easy for citizens to sort of see what was happening and critique it. And what's happening with kind of the open government movement is that there's much more transparency, that's starting to happen with it, procurement information, bid information, what data, open data. So a lot of stuff is now available that wasn't available previously. It's different, that's sort of, evolving from the reinvent government effort. The reinvent government effort was very internal, and there was no citizen insight or feedback. And what's happening with kind of open government is building on that and really holding the processes accountable by saying, here's all this information, citizens can review it or manipulate it, the data, or review the processes or comment on the processes. Go have at it, and that's powerful. That's a big deal, as Joe Biden says.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're right. No, that's very insightful, because first of all, yes, now we have the capability of the citizens being engaged with the technology that allows them to, you know, go to a webinar or, you know, pull up all kinds of documents and so forth compared to 15 years ago. That so now there is that case. It is easier. Now the hard part is actually doing the engaging.
Yeah.
And aligning it so that it's happening at the inside at the same time it's happening at the outside. Because if you get everybody all excited on the outside without doing anything, talking about the cultural issues, you know, on the inside, if the carrots and sticks on the inside, the rewards and punishments stay the same on the inside, then the people on the inside aren't going to come out and play.
If
they won't be allowed to come out and play, that's, you know, if nothing's changed in the house, the kids aren't going to come out and play because they're not being allowed to. Before you might have said, you know, they were trying to do it on the inside, but there weren't any friends to go out and play with on the outside. So it's kind of like, okay, now we got to do it both. At the inside and the outside need to be aligned so that people will come out and play, and the people on the outside will, or, you know, can come inside or however you want to talk about it. But so that both parties are there at the same time with the same thing going on and not rely on, you know, totally doing it inside like they did before, totally doing it outside like they did before. So that to me is the big picture. It sounds like you might share that perspective too, but like I said, I don't want to put words in your mouth there, Luke, but I seem to hear the same thing, that it's not one or the other. It's going to have to be both at the same time.
Yeah, I think, you know, and these are issues that everyone's trying to figure out, you know, from the startup early company to big companies to, you know, to government. Everybody's trying to figure out how to leverage these tools in a creative way to engage with their constituent or their citizen or their customer. You know, it's not unique to just the government. But yeah, I mean, that's where we are now. You know, we've got excited about the technology. We are understanding how to be more open, and we're starting to inject a sort of open or transparent philosophy in the culture. And now it's really, you know, with that is really figuring out how to actively, proactively engage with citizens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are muscles we haven't used for a long time, so we shouldn't be surprised if we get all, you know, we throw ourselves out, throw a muscle out, our back out, or something like that. It's not going to be easy. We have a few minutes left, but is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have, or that you'd like to talk about that's exciting, or
Well, there's
Fancy now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a couple of things, you know, with GovFresh that, you know, we'll see a little bit more of. I'm working with the city of Manor and the CIO of Manor, Dustin Heisler, and the city manager Phil Tate, and bringing an event to Manor, and we're calling it Manor.GovFresh, and that's going to happen sometime in the fall. And really what we want to do is Dustin and Manor have been prominently featured on the White House blog, the Wall Street Journal, and other publications. He was just on the cover of Government Technology. But really bringing the local government together, local governments together, and really working on how sharing Manor's experience with local government and saying, look, it's possible to execute on a low budget, execute technology and engage with citizens on a lower budget with the tools that are available, and really kind of highlight Manor, but also our ideal is to really communicate to the local government that they can do it also, and really show them hands-on ways how, and ideally help in that process building up to the event, help another small government do exactly what Mainer has done and showcase them as well. So that's really the exciting thing that's coming up in the mm-hmm. next few months.
And having and I share that perspective too. Now that I'm in back in my small town here, the idea that that those can be pilots for larger projects. But anyway, we have 10 seconds left. I thank Luke Freshwell from GovFresh for being on with us today. And I'm Steve Buckley, and show up next week for another Open Government Radio. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay. See ya.